This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
Instruct, command Aaron and his sons, saying, "Zois Torah Ta'elo." These are the laws. This is the Torah of the Korban Oila. The Oila is one of the many korbanos which were brought and which are described in the Sedra. The Oila was brought for thoughts which were incorrect, not for an action which was done wrong, but for an attitude which is wrong. That's the first thing. That's the cause, the thing that would bring about an Oila in most cases. The second peculiar thing about an Oila was that it was completely burnt on the Mizbeach. Nothing of it was eaten or nothing of it was left over. Hiya Oila al Moikto al Mizbeach kol halayla ad haboker. That is the Oila which stays on the spit on the Mizbeach, stays on the fire on the Mizbeach right through the night until the morning. That's another peculiarity of the Oila, that it's cooked throughout the night. Ve'esha Mizbeach tukad boi, and the fire of the altar remains burning on it. Rashi is worried about the use of the word tzav. Normally it says, and Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, tell Aaron and his children saying, or convey to Aaron and his children saying, yet tzav et Aaron des bono, instruct them, command them. The strength of the word tzav appears on the surface to be uncalled for. It seems to imply that Aaron is not going to do his job properly, and that he needs to be prompted, he needs to be instructed to do it. Normally, tell Aaron that's what he's got to do, but yet, tzav, you're instructed. Says Rashi, based on a Sifra and on a Gemara, Ein tzav ela loshen zirus miyad uladeves. The word tzav is used when the Torah wants to indicate zirus. Zirus means urging in a situation where, in other words, speeding up, encouraging, putting a bit of lighting a firecracker under somebody. That's what zirus really means. So the word tzav is used when zirus is necessary, when the din applies miyad uladoros, when the din that is going to be commanded applies at the time of the instruction and for all future generations. That's when the word tzav is used. Amar Rabbi Shimon, said Rabbi Shimon, the Torah has to be most particular to be mezarez, to urge, to enthuse people, in situations which involve financial losses. That's where the Torah has to be particularly careful to be mezarez, to encourage people to do it and to use the strong lotion of tzav, implying, says Rabbi Shimon, not implying, virtually stating, that where there's chisro and kis, where there's a loss, a monetary loss, where there's likely to be a monetary loss, there's likely to be atzlus, because zirus is the counterpart of atzlus. Atzlus is laziness. A little bit of, one tends to leave things a little bit not quite as they should be. One isn't as enthusiastic as one should be. And that's where zirus comes in. So the implication is that where there's chisro and kis, where you might be losing money, that's where there's likely to be atzlus, one's likely to be lazy about it. And where the Torah has to be mezarez, where the Torah has to encourage and urge. And the example given here is the Oila. Here is tzav, says Rashi, bringing Rabbi Shimon. This is a situation of financial loss which needs the word tzav. The Kohen must know that this is an instruction, it's a commandment, it's strong, and there's no place at all for any kind of laziness and for any kind of hesitancy. The Rishonim discuss what the loss of money is here, and the Ramban disagrees with Rashi altogether and says that this Gemara doesn't, that part of the Gemara doesn't apply to this particular piece of Chumash. Be that as it may, Rashi says it does, and the Sifrei Chachamim says that the loss that we're talking about is the fact that the Kohanim get nothing out of the oil. Out of all the other Korbanos, the Kohanim get parts. They are parts of the Korban, of the sacrifice, which the Kohanim get, and they can eat, or they can sell, they can do what they want with it. From the oil, the Kohanim get nothing. And obviously, the Torah is worried that the Kohanim will neglect the Oilos in favor of other more profitable sacrifices, and they will opt more to try and do that. They'll all run off to try and do the korbanos which bring in bigger income. And the olos, which are the greatest of all the korbanos, the olos which is the most superior of all the korbanos, will be neglected a little bit. And so the Torah uses the Loshon Tzav, a commandment. This is a staggering statement of Rashi and of Rabbi Shimon. The extent to which the profit motive operates in people. That unless you're going to make some money out of the deal, the tendency is to take it a little bit lightly. The tendency is not to put the same kind of effort into it as one would put into a situation where one was going to make a bit of money. And I said to the ladies this morning that what we can learn from here is a day-to-day situation which one hears people complaining about every day of the week. I left my financial affairs to my best friend and he made a mess of it. He made for himself, he made a million. He's a wealthy man. But my business he neglected. My best friend, one hears it all every day. What goes wrong? Because he's a best friend. Don't give it to your best friend. Or if you give it to your best friend, give it on a payment basis. We see here the profit motive operates very strongly. People tend to neglect work from which they're not making money. And it's not good if you want a job done properly. Pay the person for the work that they're doing. Don't think you're getting it cheap if you don't pay. You're getting it very expensive if you don't pay. Because it's going to cost you a lot more in the long run. That's how people operate. People need the profit incentives. And if there are two things that could be done, one's going to bring in a profit and one isn't, or one's going to bring a larger profit than another, people are going to opt for the one that brings the larger profit. That's the way they operate, that's the efficiency under which they operate, and those are the returns they want to see, and that's just bad luck. So you've got to see that you're making it worthwhile for a person to do the job you want him to do. That's the economics of living. Why is it so? People see money, and in this year we're going to define the Torah approach to money. It's going to be very interesting to develop, to define the Torah approach to material things. We'll take further some concepts which we developed a long time ago, and particularly to money, to the earning of money and to the value of money. The man in the street sees money as a measure of his success. That's the only way he can measure his success. Money is the degree to which he's been successful in what he's done. And he measures everything in terms of money. Time is money, and everything he measures in terms of the value, how much does it cost, how much is it going to detract from his business. Everything is measured in terms of money. And for an ordinary person to do something which is going to cause him monetary loss, and don't forget here in the Oilo, it's not that it's causing him direct monetary loss. The Kohen doesn't have to pay anything towards the Oilah. It's just that while he's busy with the Oilah, he's not able to do other korbanos which could bring in an income. And that even is such that the drive for measuring success in terms of income is such that a person is not going to be prepared to sacrifice income generating time to do things that are not income generating. Because it's against human nature. Money we're going to see is something which everybody values and which everybody uses as a measure. It's more than the value of the money itself, it's a measure. And to take away from my money just to do something which has to be done when I could at the same time be doing something which is just as much a mitzvah, for a korban to bring, for a kohen to busy himself with a korban chatos or with a korban shlomim, is just the same mitzvah as busying himself with a noilo. And the Torah fears that he's going to opt for busying himself with the other korbanos at the expense and the neglect of the korban oila. Okay, so we understand such a thing. People are profit motivated. They expect income. They live by income. And they're going to spend their income generating hours in the most efficient way possible. We understand that. But who's this tzav addressed to? Not addressed to the man in the street. Tzav es Aharon ve es Bonav. Command Aharon. Tzav, commanding. Are we worried that Aharon is going to do this? Are we worried that Aharon is going to make profit calculations here and decide which korbanos is going to handle on the basis of which are more profitable and which are less profitable? Aharon and Bonav, his own children? And the kohanim that came immediately after it, we're not talking only for future generations, we're talking about there and then as well. Miyad uladoiros. Tzavet, Aaron, instruct him with the word tzav. He should know that there's no place here for laziness. And we're worried that if you don't come over with the strongest lashon possible, if you don't use the word tzav, we're worried that because there's chisra and kis, because the kohanim, including Aaron, make no profit out of this, they're going to be a little bit neglectful in how they handle the olah. That's amazing. And more amazing than that is a Gemara which I've often quoted but never really explained to you. The Gemara in Sotah Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph, where the Gemara brings from the story of Moshe's parents who put him into this little box which they made, and says in the Torah, "Vatikach lo tevas gomer," and they made the box out of gomer. Gomer was a sort of a, I don't know, probably a sort of a rubber plant kind of thing. It was a reedy thing and very flimsy. Asked the Gemara, "Maishna gomer? Why did they use gomer exactly?" And not so much as the Gemara asking why did they use gomer, but why does the Torah go out of its way to tell us what they used? Why is it important for us to know that they used this gomer reed? Let us just say they made a box and they put him in the box. Amar Rabbi Elazar, says Rabbi Elazar, "Mikan l'tzadikim." From here we learn a certain thing about the psychology of tzadikim. Shemamoinam chaviv aleihem yeser migufam. Their money is more precious to them than their own physical being. Funny thing to say about tzaddikim. We imagine tzaddikim as people who don't care about money and make no difference. They're not in this world for money, they're in this world for mitzvahs. Tzaddikim, mamoinan chaviv aleihem yosei migufom, that their money is more precious and valuable to them than their own bodies. How do we learn it? Says Rashi, because the goymer was flimsy. And they could have made the little box in which they put their precious child Moshe. Can you imagine what a precious child this was to them? The parents could have made a more firm box, a safer box, make it out of gomer. They're not prepared to spend more than the minimum. Gomer will do. That's it. And the Marshal says, don't think that this means that gomer was endangered his life. It wasn't that. Obviously, you don't put your money before your life in the sense of not spending money and rather giving your life. Obviously that would be crazy. Their money is dearer to them than their life means they're prepared to tolerate discomfort in order to save money. That's what it means. They're not going to spend money on making themselves more comfortable, because the money is worth more to them than their own physical comfort. And this gomer, what we're worried about the gomer, Gomer would do, says the Marshal. It wasn't dangerous for Moshe's life, but he would have been much more comfortable and more secure and more solid had they used a more solid wood other than Gomer. From here we see that they are not, the tzaddikim are not prepared to spend unnecessarily even on their own comfort. Why? Kokach lama? Why have they got such an exaggerated attitude towards money? Lefi she'en poshtin yedehin begezel. The reason, says the Gemara, is because tzaddikim don't steal. What's the funny? You don't steal it. I can understand that. Making money is hard. There's no shortcut to making money. It's everybody's ambition except the lottery that we spoke about last night. That's the only shortcut to making money, and I don't even know how much of a shortcut that is. But apart from gambling, there's no shortcut to making money. After the chait of Adam HaRishon, there was a statement, a klolo, bezeyas, apecha, tzoycha, lochi. You'll earn your living, but you're going to sweat for it. There's no shortcut. That's it. To be successful financially requires hard, hard work. Unless one's going to be dishonest. If you're going to cheat in the game, you can do it more quickly. It's not possible that somebody, unless it's a gamble, that somebody really becomes wealthy very quickly out of straight and honest business. Business is a slow thing. You start off with 100. And how much can you make on 100 if you're going to be honest? You can make 130, 140, 200 maybe you can make out of it. You've made 200 and 50 goes to the tax man, so you're left with 50. And to run your business costs another 30 or 40, so you're left with 10 at the end of the day. So now you've got 110 and you start again. So now you can make 220. And so you build up bit by bit, slowly, slowly. It's a long, hard slog if one's going to do it honestly. Because that's what business is. When I joined my previous company, I said to them, I don't know anything about business. I don't know how you do it. It's all very strange to me. And they said, it's nothing. You buy and you sell. And you sell for more than you bought. And that's business. And I said, yeah, but that's green grocer works like that. But not an empire like this. They said, an empire like this works the same way. And if anything looks more complicated than that, you better question it, because there's something Mickey Mouse going on if it looks more complicated than that. That's what business is. And if one sees business as that, how much can you make? So you build up slowly, unless you inherit a fortune. We're talking about somebody who's starting your first slog. It's a build up, and you work, and it's 10, and it's 20, and it's 30, and it's 40, and it's 50. If you're going to cheat, it's easy. Because then out of 100, you can make 1,000. And you can make 1,000,000 out of 100. You don't even need the 100. You can break into a bank and take out the 1,000,000. There's no limit to what you can do if you're prepared to cheat. That's it. And there's not that much of a difference between breaking into a bank and starting without the 100, than starting with the 100 and making 1,000 out of it. It's the same kind of dishonesty. And it makes no difference if you cheat the government or you cheat your customer. If you're cheating in income tax or you're cheating in your dealings with people, it doesn't make terribly much difference. Cheating is cheating. That way you can make money. And honesty does pay, by the way. You can get away with it. Many people do. The reason we're honest is not because it doesn't pay to be dishonest. It does pay to be dishonest. You can make a lot of money by being dishonest. But that's not the way we operate. And if you accept that, aim pasty if you're Dame Begazel, they're not prepared to have one penny in their business, which is not rightfully theirs, then you've got to know it's going to be a slog. And a tzaddik has to work for his money real, real hard. People often wonder why tzaddik has to battle so much for the living. That's part of the reason. Aim pasty if you're Dame Begazel, they're not prepared to do it. Once that's the case, that there's a sweat, and the tzaddik starts, and he goes out, and he works, and he works, and he makes his penny, and he turns the penny over, and he makes another penny, and he turns it over, and so he builds up slowly, slowly. When he puts that kind of work into it, he becomes chavi. A parent feels more love for a child than a child feels for a parent. For one reason only. That's the tzar gidul bonim, what the parents have put into the child. You develop closeness by what you give, by what you put in, not by what you take. To take an apple and eat the apple, you don't develop a closeness to the apple. The apple's gone, finished, just you left. If you want to develop closeness to an apple, plant an apple tree and nurture it and tend it and water it and spray it and watch it and be mispalil for it and prune it. And finally, when you pick the apple, then you have a close relationship to your apple because of what you put into it. Not what you take from the apple. That doesn't give a close relationship. That's something that one has to remember in education. It's one of the hardest things in educating children and talmidim, is to remember that a closeness is only going to be developed on their part by their giving, not by their taking. You can give as much as you want, and it doesn't develop anything. Nothing at all. Not in a child, and not in a talmid, and not in a friend. It develops in you. By your giving, you develop a close relationship. Well, you'll find also that the relationship between a Talmud from a Rav to a Talmud is much, much closer than it can possibly be from a Talmud to a Rav. It will always be that way. That's human nature. It applies to Torah as well, in fact. It says in the first chapter of Tehillim, the Torah Hashem Chesto, his will is in the Torah of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And he thinks only in his Torah. Now the simple translation means that his desire is in God's Torah, and he thinks only in his, that is God's Torah. The Midrash learns it differently. It says, first the Torah is called God's Torah, Shneema the Torah Tashem Chesoy. His desire is in God's Torah. And afterwards it's called his Torah, Shneimar of a Torah, he's the Talmud's Torah. You can take the Torah and you can take it away from God, so to say, and make it your own. And the Chaim Sholevitz used to explain, that's the power of Omar, that's the power of toiling over Torah, of working, of sweating, of thinking, of analyzing, of tearing your brains out of every piece of Torah. That's what it can do. It can change the Torah from Torah Hashem, God's Torah, You can make it your own. That's how you make a thing yours. You make a thing yours by breaking your back over it. There's no other way to make it yours. One doesn't feel that something belongs to oneself until one's put in every drop of blood that one has to make it work. Then one feels it's one's own. And that's what one's meant to be doing with Torah, and that's what one's meant to do with anything that one wants to be one's own. One's children, one's wife, one's family, one's talmidim, anything. One has to put in and in and in until one feels this is mine now. That's the power of Torah, it's the power of hard work. That's what it can do for a human being. And therefore, since a tzaddik works harder at his business, believe it or not, than an unharder, because if he doesn't work hard, he's got nothing, because he doesn't steal. He's honest. And that requires much harder work, not necessarily longer hours. We're not talking about the length of hours. We're talking about the intensity of work while he's working. And he puts much more into his business. A tzaddik puts much more into his business than an unharder does. An unharder is working out what I can take out of my business. A tzaddik is working what I can put into my business. And he puts his heart and soul into it. And that creates a chavivus. That makes it close to him. Yesemi gufo is closer than to his own body. He doesn't pay his body the attention that he pays his business. That's a tzaddik. Different picture of a tzaddik. We don't normally see a tzaddik that way. That's not the way we would imagine a tzaddik. But that's how it is. Chavivim amoinam yesemi gufo. They find their money more precious to them than their bodies. And therefore, the instruction to Aaron applies also to Aaron. If a tzaddik is more attached to his money than he is to his own body, we have to be worried as to how he's going to relate to time-consuming functions such as attending to an oilah, which brings him no financial remuneration. But it goes further with a tzaddik, and this one has to appreciate. When a tzaddik looks at a rand note, when there used to be a rand note, a rand note that he's made, he's worked and he made a rand, and he looks at that rand, he can cry, he feels heartbroken. You know what that rand has cost him. That's how he looks at the rand. What time I had to put in to make that rand, when I could have been learning a piece of Gemara, when I could have learned something that I didn't know before, when I could have progressed myself further, where I could have reached a level that I would never have reached otherwise. I had to sacrifice time and effort, koyach. So when I came back from my business, I was tired. If I wasn't tired, I could have learned with greater strength and I could have understood more. From my own understanding and my own progress, I had to sacrifice that to make this little rand. That's how I tzaddik looks at his rand. Terribly precious, because they cost him a fortune. There's no way you can estimate the cost per rand to a tzaddik. The cost in time, the cost in progress. He looks at that rand and he thinks to himself, what have I given up? What might I never ever achieve because I had to spend that time making that rand? Now, how is the tzaddik going to spend that rand? Quickly? No. Not because he's a miser, because he values that rand. A miser is not a person who values money. Something else. A miser is a person who values nothing else. So he can't understand the value of anything else, and the mailer, he doesn't spend his money. That's not what a tzaddik is. A tzaddik hangs on to his money because it's just too precious to spend, because he can't afford time to make another rand. And he would rather suffer physical discomfort, because physical discomfort he would have suffered in his learning in any case. He would have been hurting his brain, he would have been sitting up late at night, he would have been uncomfortable and tired and heartbroken in trying to understand the Gemara. So physical discomfort he's ready for, that he doesn't mind. You need to make a rand to live, so he'll make what he needs to live. He'll make what he needs to be in Mekayim the Torah. He'll find value in that rand. It's not as if he just looks at that rand in terms of the sweat and blood. He takes pleasure in the rand too. After all, with this rand I can buy things, I can do tzedakah, I can do chesed, I can make my family comfortable, I can educate my family, I can buy a lulav and esrog, I can buy a pair of tzitzis, I can buy a sefer and learn. The rand is powerful. He sees the power of the rand, but he will only use the rand for power. He will only use the rand to give him back in spirituality what that rand costs in spirituality. tzaddik will never spend the rand for which he had to give his spirituality on something which won't bring back spirituality. That's the essence of a tzaddik system of money spending, of money earning and money spending. The hard work which goes into his business, no, okay, isn't Poshet Yodah Begezel, he doesn't steal and he doesn't thieve and he's not dishonest, so it takes it takes tremendous effort and time, okay, that part he's still prepared to put up with. But the thought of what it cost him in terms of progress, that's what he sees reflected in every rand, and he's not going to spend it easily, not even on a wooden box for his precious son. He'll use goyma, because he's not prepared. Son will survive in goyma. I'm not prepared to sacrifice more time to make another 2 rand to make a proper box for the child. Not necessary, it's unnecessary. And so that means therefore that everybody has to live a very Spartan existence. It depends on each individual. The important thing is to understand that what one spends should be based on the principle of what does it bring me back in terms of spirituality. Some people need comfort for their spirituality. Some people need power for their spirituality. Different people need different things, and one has to scrutinize oneself very honestly, and if necessary with the help of others, because it's very difficult to scrutinize oneself honestly, to figure out how much do I need to spend to function properly in a spiritual way. And different people need different amounts. But the cheshbon always, the thing that always goes through his mind, is am I spending this rand on something which is going to bring me equal returns at least? Otherwise it's not good business. If it's only going to give me equal returns, then I'm just breaking even. What I want is that by spending this rand, I'm going to be able to achieve more than I could have by not working for it in the first place. And that's not easy. And then we understand an attitude of an iron. Before that, I'll tell you, in fact, the Chofetz Chaim became involved. His yeshiva was short of cash, and luckily a certain gentleman in Warsaw died and left 80,000 rubles, which was a fortune of money, in his will for the Chofetz Chaim's yeshiva. And after the death, the family contested the will, and it had to go to arbitration. The Chofetz Chaim had to go to Warsaw and spend a lot of time there arguing out the arbitration. In the end, they compromised and he got 50%. He got 40,000 rubles. He came back and he was with one of his Talmidim on the train on the way back, and he was totally depressed. And the Talmid said to him, you know, 40,000 rubles is also a lot of money. He said, yes, 40,000 rubles, wonderful. He's very happy with the 40,000 rubles. Talmid said, so why are you so depressed? He said, do you know what these 40,000 rubles have cost me? You know what I could have been achieving during this time that we've been spending at trying to get the 40,000 rubles? Do you think that's worth 40,000 rubles to you? So Talmud laughed. He said, don't be silly, but you'll get Gan Eden for this. I mean, with these 40,000 rubles, you're enabling hundreds of others to learn. Without this, you would have had to close down the yeshiva. Okay, so you spend time, this, you'll get Gan Eden for this. You know what the Chofetz Chaim answered? He said, keep Gan Eden. I don't want Gan Eden. I just want to know and understand the Torah. That's all. I'm not waiting for Gan Eden. What happens after it happens afterwards. My one ambition is to know and understand the Torah in full, and I've given up time from that for these 40,000 rubles, and no Gan Eden can even pay me off for that. That's how he thought. But it had to be done. And we have the same concept, in fact, in Purim, where the Midrash says about Mordechai, Amar Rav Yosef, Gadol Talmud Torah, Yosef Me'atzolus Mefoshes. Talmud Torah is greater than saving lives. The Me'ikara Choshev Mordechai Achar Arbo. Because in the first stage, when Mordechai is mentioned in Divrei Hayomim, at first, he's mentioned fourth in a list of seniority. Asher Boim Zribovel. The fourth are the people who came with Zribovel to Eretz Yisrael. Yeshua, Nehemiah, Sharia, Ra'alio, Mordechai, Balshim. It's mentioned fourth. And at the end of it, he's put fifth. Means he was demoted one position after the Purim story. The time that he put in to the Purim cost him status in terms of Yediya Satara, in terms of Chochmah, in terms of knowledge and level, real level. He actually suffered a drop. And the Midrash says from here, you see, the Talmud Torah learning is greater than saving lives, because Mordechai couldn't make up in stature from saving lives what he lost from not learning. Yes, it had to be done. The Chafetz Chaim had to go to Warsaw. It was the correct thing to do, although it cost him. Mordechai had to save the Jews, although it cost him. But you know what this cost was to Mordechai? We don't know what Mesidus Nefesh is. For Mordechai to give his life would have been as easy as that. For Mordechai to give every penny he had would have been even easier. For Mordechai to give everything in the world he had would have been easy. But for Mordechai to give of his time, time which could have been used to elevate his position, never mind retain his position, at least to stay top on the list, at least to stay the same kind of Talmid Chacham he was before, for Mordechai to be prepared to sacrifice that, that's Mesiras Nefesh. It's unbelievable. One doesn't understand the Mesiras Nefesh of Mordechai. And being prepared to sacrifice his stature to save the Jewish people had to be done. But it cost him. Prophet Chaim had to go to Warsaw. He had to get those 40,000 rubles. But those were the most expensive 40,000 rubles that anybody ever earned. No 40,000 rubles cost more. But it had to be done. Prophet Chaim suffered. Gan Eden he might get. But stature he lost. During that time he could have raised himself and he didn't have the opportunity to raise himself. It's unbelievable when one thinks about it. And that makes it very clear when God says to Moshe, Sabbath Aaron, instructing with a tzibri, because I'm worried, says God. Aaron's not going to want to waste time. And if he can do something which is going to bring in a bit of income so that he can spend more time learning and preparing himself and doing, not having to worry about his family affairs, not having to worry about his financial situation, even the greatest of Kohanim I'm worried about, that they're going to tend to neglect the Olah. Not because money is important to them in the sense that they want the power. Money is important to them because they need the time. And money gives them the time. With this one can understand another chazal. It says in the Shema, V'ahavta et Hashem elokecha b'chol levavcha, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart. That means with all your emotional ability. Everything you've got emotionally, your yetzirah, your yetzirah tov, your full emotional intensity has to go into Ahavat Hashem. And also you've got to be prepared to give your life. Okay. Can the Torah ask anything more of us? All our emotional strength. We can try. That's very hard, to give all one's emotional strength to anything. To Avas Hashem is particularly difficult. Okay, we'll try. To give our lives. Who can ask of a human being more than to give his life? That's the maximum. The Torah is not satisfied with that. In addition to giving your life, you've got to go one step higher. Kol moedecha, you've got to give all your ma'od as well. You've got to give all your excellence, everything that you've got. What does that ma'odecha mean? Says the Chazal. Mamoncha, your money. Now come on. Somebody who's prepared to give all his emotion to the Ribbono Shel and he's prepared to give his life. He's prepared to die for God. Do you still have to be told that you've got to give your money as well? Answer Chazal, yes, because tzaddikim chavivim amoinam aleim yosem igufom. Because tzaddikim value money more than their bodies. And you can have a situation even where a tzaddik is prepared to suffer severe physical discomfort and even lose his life. But money, not so easy to suffer a loss of money. Because that represents a very, very serious loss in opportunity as far as he's concerned. It always troubled me that Moedecha. Two things troubled me. Firstly, why the word Moed? Why doesn't the Torah say Bechol Mamoincha, with all your money? Why does it use the word Moed, which means with all your everything? That's what it means. So you must say, because a human being values money more than anything. And that's what the Torah is teaching us. Bechol Moedecha. By the way, the Torah teaches us that one of the things, or the thing that one values most, is money. Then I say, okay, but not everybody is like that. Some people who value other things more than money. The answer is, there isn't anybody who values anything more than money. And that's the chiddush. Not Rishoyim and not Tzaddikim. Everybody values money more than anything. There's nothing that is more valuable to a human being than money, including his life. It's frightening. But it's for two different reasons. An ordinary person in Am Haaretz values money above everything because of what money can give him. It can give him status. It can give him power. It can give him security as far as he thinks that there is security. Those are the three things people work for.
They want status, they want security, and they want power. And money can give the whole lot. And that's why the ordinary man values money more than anything. And he believes that with money he can buy health, and he can buy the best doctors, and he can buy the best lawyers. Whatever you want, you can buy with money. And so he works for money. He works for money, and he values money in as much as money can give to him everything that he wants. A tzaddik also values money more than anything. But he values money because what he put into the money, not what the money can give him. The money can't give him as much as he put into it. He has to put into it because you need to live. It's just how the way the world operates. After organization, we have to work, we have to earn money. But the reason he values his money is not because of what the money can do for him. The money can do nothing for him. It can keep him going, that's all. Why he values the money is what he put into the money. And now I'll ask you, very simple. So who values their money more? A tzaddik or an amoret? The amoret values his money because of what his money can give to him. The tzaddik values his money because of what he can give to his money, or what he did give to his money. Who loves him more? The child loves the parent, or the parent loves the child? A child loves the parent because of what he receives from the parent. The security, the support, the status. That's why he loves the parent. Why does the parent love a child? He gets no security from the child, no status from the child. What does he get from the child? Nothing. It's what he gave to the child. And who loves who more? The parent loves the child more. Similarly, the tzaddik loves his money more than the rosho loves his money. The tzaddik feels more attached to it, and it's more precious to him than the rosho, and for totally different reasons. But now we understand the chol moedecha. You've got to love God not only with all your life, but also with all your money. And there is nobody who values money less than life. Everybody values money more than life, and that's why money is the source of such corruption, even sometimes among Talmidei Chachamim, even sometimes among people who are involved in spiritual things. Money can corrupt. And one asks, how is it possible? How can money corrupt a person whose ambition is to sit and learn Torah? Very simple. His ambition is to sit and learn Torah, and therefore whatever money he can save is going to give him more time to learn Torah. And if he has to be a little bit ruthless or not quite straight in saving that money, at least he can learn more Torah. He doesn't see the crookedness of it. The Yetzer is so great because he values that money. He values the money because of the time it takes to earn it, and he's not prepared to spend unnecessary time. And so if he can earn his money a little bit quicker by being just a tiny little bit dishonest, he persuades himself that that's alright. And that's the Yetzer of money. That's the serious danger in a relationship to money, that one's able to convince oneself that it's the right thing to do. Not only that one's allowed to be crooked, but before very long you find people convincing themselves that it's still a mitzvah to be crooked under certain circumstances. That's the tzaddik. Everybody loves money, and if somebody tells you they don't, then you know that he's not a tzaddik, and he's not an amoret, he's just a gormit, and there's nothing at all. Because, all the lies. Because if he's an amoret, he loves money because money gives him everything that he's missing in every other area. And if he's a tzaddik, he loves money because of how hard it was to earn it and how much he values it. So if he says, I don't love money, then he's either very spoiled and has whatever he wants, or he's a gormit, or as Mr. Cohen says, he's a liar. When one understands that, one understands the value of a tzaddik's penny. When a tzaddik gives a cent to tzedakah, or 5 cents, or a rand, or 10 rand, it makes no difference. Do you know what he's giving? He's not just giving money, he's giving his life. He's giving his insides, he's giving his sweat and toil, he's giving his own progress. He's sacrificing to give that little bit of stuff. Because it took him time to earn that money. It wasn't earned dishonestly, he had to go out and work for it. And it required kochos and time which would otherwise have gone into Torah. And he's taking those kochos and those time, that time, which is expressed in this 10 rand note, and he's giving it away. There's no tzedakah like that. There's no tzedakah as valuable and as deep and as rich as the tzedakah that comes from a tzaddik. A millionaire can give 1 million rand, and a tzaddik can give 1 cent, and the cent is worth more than 1 million rand. Because 1 million rand didn't cost very much. What would the millionaire have been doing if he wasn't making 1 million? He would have been playing bowls. So it cost him a game of bowls. It doesn't matter very much. But the tzaddik, if he wasn't earning that cent, would have been learning, or would have been doing mitzvahs, would have been raising himself. and that is paid to make the fence, and he's given you the fence. So if the tzaddik shows hachnosas ochim, if he has you at his table, and he spends money on feeding you, he's prepared to work a little bit harder so that he can afford to have you at the table and give you something to eat, whether you're an oni or you're just a friend or whoever you are, makes no difference. Do you know what that is? Do you know what he's giving you? That's what one has to understand. And if a tzaddik takes up time to spend with you, prepared to sit and learn a little piece of Gemara with you, discuss something with you, do you know what he's giving you in that time? One has to understand to value things correctly. Part of the sickness of a society is when they can't value correctly. When gold is worth 400 one day and 800 the next day, the society is mad. And either it's 400 or 800. It can't be 400 yesterday and 800 today. The same gold. That's when a society goes crazy. And when an individual doesn't know how to value something he's been given, that's also a sickness. And he thinks it's all the same. 10 rand is 10 rand. It makes no difference who the 10 rand comes from. A lunch or a supper is the same. It makes no difference who gave me the lunch or supper. Time is the same. It makes no difference who gave me the time. It does make a difference. You've got to evaluate before you appreciate what you've been given. You've got to calculate the cost to the giver in what he gave you. How much did it cost him? How much did he spend on you? And sometimes you'll work out he spent 4 rand on you. Okay, very nice. But sometimes you'll work out that he spent some Olam Haba on you. Sometimes you'll work out that he spent his own progress and that he spent his own time on you. And that's a different thing altogether. That cannot be repaid ever. Having a discussion with somebody recently, he said, look, I don't like to owe anybody anything. And I said, my friend, that's your problem. You've got to settle very early in life that you will always owe many people amounts that you are incapable of ever repaying. Because one little idea, if somebody gives you a piece of knowledge that you didn't have, how are you going to pay that? How much does it cost? How are you going to calculate how much you have to repay him for that one idea? Say, Chazal, you can't repay for that. So we're in debt. We all go around our lives being permanently in debt to parents, teachers, friends, wives, husbands, children, always in debt. And it's a debt that we can never possibly repay. That's how it is. And we've got to settle with it. And we have to at least calculate the magnitude of our debt. There are many countries in Africa who also have debts that they can't possibly repay. It's just impossible. Can't be. And it always amuses me to see the world making plans. Their debts are now due and how they're going to pay and how much it is. But it's right. The world must calculate. And it must be knocked into their heads to the African states. That's how much you owe. We know you will never get it, but that's not important. That's how much it is. You should know what the value is. And so when an individual gets something for which he can't repay, he mustn't just write it off as something that I can't repay. Okay, very nice, finished. He's got to work out what that is. How much it costs and how much it's worth. And you must understand that. And that's the beauty of a contribution from the tzaddik. When a tzaddik spends money, that money is rich. That money has got sweat and blood and tears on it. That money has opportunity on it. That money is the most expensive money that there ever was. And that's how one has to relate to a tzaddik who spends money or a tzaddik who spends time. One sees that in fact in a very peculiar Gemara in Moed Koten Dav Kaches. Rabbi Chiya lo ava matzi lemikra vele. The Malach HaMovitz, the angel of death, wanted to get hold of Rabbi Chiya, and he couldn't get anywhere near. So high was the level of Kedusha of Rabbi Chiya that the Malach HaMovitz, just the angel of death, couldn't come anywhere near. Yom Echad Idmilei Ke'anya. One day the Malach HaMovitz dressed up as a poor man. Ato Tarif Abava. And he came and he stood at Rabbi Chiya's gate. Amalei Apikli Rifte. Please give me a piece of bread. Apikli. Rabbi Chiya, without a question, gave him a piece of bread. Amalei. So then he caught Rabbi Chiya and he said, "Belav kamarachem mara anya, ahal gavra amaylo kamarachem." For a poor person, you have sympathy. You're prepared to give bread to a poor person. But to him, when the Malach HaMovitz came, you weren't prepared to give yourself. Galilei achvelei shotedunura. He revealed himself and showed him that he was the Malach HaMovitz. Amtzilei nafshei, and Rabbi Chiya handed over his soul. It's a weird Gemara. Because he's prepared to give us a loaf of bread, he's expected to give his life as well? The answer is yes, there's not much difference. When Rabbi Chia gave that loaf of bread, it wasn't a loaf of bread, it was a piece of his life. He worked for that loaf of bread, and he sacrificed his own time and his own progress. And he's prepared to give it to a poor man who he doesn't even know. Says the Malach HaMoveh, so when the right time is right, you're prepared to give your life, your ruchnius, your spirituality, your progress, you're prepared to put it on the line and to give it to others. So what does it bother you to give me a little bit more than a loaf of bread? The same currency. I'm asking for your life. Just not a part of it, I want all of it. And I'm entitled to all of it. And Rabbi Chia had no argument. You're right. If I'm prepared to give my life to a poor man, when the time comes, I have to be prepared to give my life to you. Now one understands the Gemara. That loaf of bread that Rabbi Chia gave the Malach HaMoveh when he was dressed up as a poor man, that wasn't a loaf of bread. One has to see what's inside that. And only too often we just don't see what's inside the things we handle. We just see them as objects, and two loaves of bread look exactly the same to us. Rabbi Chia's loaf of bread looks completely different. It's not the same thing to another man's loaf of bread. Rabbi Chia's loaf of bread cost billions. There's no way you can put a figure to what that loaf of bread cost Rabbi Chia. There's just no figure. It's just beyond the reckoning of any human being to figure out the cost of that loaf of bread. There's a piece of Rabbi Chia inside. And Rabbi Chia gives it. Gives it over to the poor man. That's the meaningfulness of a present from a tzaddik, of a gift from a tzaddik. One has to reach this level, because that's the attitude one has to have towards one's parnosah. One has to change the currency from money to time. One has to be totally involved in progress. In exactly the same way as the business entrepreneur is totally involved in making money, and he thinks about it at night, and he wakes up in the morning, and he's got a plot, and a scheme, and a plan, and day and night, this is what occupies him. And anything that gets in his way, he calculates in terms of how much it's costing, how much opportunity he's missing, and can he afford to go and play a game of golf. And he works out in his mind how much the game of golf costs him. And it costs him more than the 10 rand that the game of golf costs. It costs him a few thousand rand. And he figures for his good health, he's prepared to spend a few thousand rand, because that's what it's costing in terms of lost opportunity, in terms of time. Everything's calculated in how much does it cost. A Ben Torah is exactly that, but in terms of spiritual progress. Advancing one's knowledge. To know more than one knew yesterday. And that doesn't mean just collecting ideas to be able to know, show off effects. That's not what we're talking about, advance as far as the Ben Torah is concerned. We're talking about perceiving yesodos, about understanding principles, understanding what the world is about, what God is about, what life is about, understanding the basic principles of Torah, and to try each day to understand something which he didn't understand before, something which is enriching his life, that he's now living in a way that he couldn't live before, that his whole standard of operation is improved, that his method of understanding is improved, that his way of interrelating with other people is improved. That's what he's doing here, and he's got a limited short time to do it. And every minute counts, and every minute can take him closer, and every minute misspent is a lost opportunity. And he's constantly got to be calculating, what is this costing me? Who knows what progress I'm spending here? Who knows what I'm sacrificing in order to do A, B, or C? In terms of my own stature and greatness, who knows what it's costing you? And he's got to work out what it's costing. Now, if he's a person who wastes his time in any case, the exercise is futile. It just doesn't matter. Time becomes meaningless when you waste time. If one is not ambitious in terms of one's progress, the whole thing is futile. You might as well be a businessman. It makes no difference. The whole thing only starts becoming meaningful when one uses time carefully, because one values time as the period during which, the limited period during which progress can be achieved. And progress has to be a burning ambition. One has to make it. One has to reach there. One's got to improve oneself. There's no point in living today if I'm living it on the same level that I lived yesterday. That's a waste of a day. I've got to be able to live today greater than yesterday. There's only one way I can do that greater than yesterday. I've got to know more than I knew yesterday. If I know the same as I knew yesterday, what am I going to do different today? Which means I've got to learn more than I learned yesterday. I've got to know something in addition to what I knew yesterday. Or I have to know it more deeply, with more clarity. And I have to have the self-discipline to put that into practice. What I now know, I've got to now live. That's what living is all about. And if I can't do that today, what have I spent today doing exactly?
In what way is this Shabbos better than last Shabbos, or better than two Shabbosim ago, or better than yesterday or the day before? There's only one way that it can be, and that is I must at the end of the day be able to say to myself, I've perceived something today which I never knew before. And it's going to be a principle of reality, a principle of Torah, and it's going to change my life in the following way. Likewise, with the meaningful things one does, a little mitzvah. A little mitzvah is an eternity. The way one put on tefillin today, the way one daven today, the way one lit lights, or one kept Shabbos, or Taras HaMishpocha today, the way one helped someone, the way one stopped oneself in the nick of time from saying something unpleasant, or making a face which is a Loshon Horodika kind of a face, just stop oneself in time, that's an Olam Haba. There's no way you can value that. You know what that's worth? Stopping oneself in the nick of time from saying one word, or just smiling at somebody who's miserable, saying hello to somebody who needs a hello. You know what that's worth in terms of spirituality? Who can go and figure it out? And if that's how one's spending one's time, learning, progressing, doing the mitzvahs as one can, and one has to spend time on business as well, one has to make a little bit of money, one's profession, one's business, and one does it as efficiently as one can to do it as quickly and honestly as one possibly can, and that's what one's life is, then each day is a new worth. Each morning one will wake up, never mind go to sleep each night. But if you've learned something new today, your mind will carry on working tonight, and you'll wake up tomorrow morning in a new world. If one's really been preoccupied in understanding something today which one didn't understand before, a new world. And one immediately puts that new world into practice, one goes out and one lives in that new world, otherwise one loses it. And Sunday is better than Shabbos. And one works on Sunday to make sure that Monday is going to be better than Sunday. And Tuesday is better than Monday, and so one moves, and so one progresses. If one's living like that, then one can operate on this basis. One can operate on the level where every cent is so valuable and becomes so meaningful, and every time one gives it or spends it, one's spending a bit of oneself. It's really, it's one's sweat and blood, and one will always calculate on that cent, am I getting from this something that's worth what I put into it? And what I put into it is estimated in, not in six figures, but in millions of figures. There's just no end to it as to what I put into making that cent. So we see that profit is the basic motivation for everybody, for tzaddikim and for rishoyim and for amaratzim. Everybody, amaratzim work for nothing but money, because that's what's going to give them everything they think they need. Tzaddikim value money more than anything because of what they've put into it, what it's cost them. They're not going to spend it easily, they're not going to lose it easily, they're not, certainly not going to waste it ever. So everybody is motivated to a large extent by profit. Ribbono Shloim is worried about the oila. The oila brings no financial benefit to anybody, and it has to compete on a business level with the chatas and the shlomim and the mincha and all the other korbanos, which do offer financial rewards to the kohanim. How is the oila going to compete? Here we have a major sociological problem. How do you motivate people when there's no profit possible for them? How do you get people to do things and spend time on things which is not going to bring them any return? You have a profit situation, a profit economy, profit orientated economy, but a hospital has to be built, and you have to offer free medical services in the hospital, otherwise you're not a society. And you've got to build roads, and you can't charge people for the use of roads. You can charge them for the use of special big highways, but you've got to have roads to be able to get to the hospital and back. You can't charge a person, and if he hasn't got money, you won't let him go on the roads. You've got to build roads. And you've got to have services. You've got to have a library for people who can't buy books so that they can go and borrow books. Who's going to run these things? Who's going to contribute to them? Who's going to keep them going in a profit-orientated society? Says the Torah, Tzav. There's only one way that can work, if you see it as a commandment. There are two kinds of commandments: an instruction from authority, from the government, and if you don't listen, the police are at your door. That's one kind of tzav, and it's a tzav which works. People who have no other motivation will do certain things out of fear of the police, that's all. But that's a pretty miserable and humiliating sort of existence. There's another kind of tzav. You do it because it's right, that's all, because the Ribbono Shel Olam commanded and instructed it. And here you have the only method to achieving or doing that which needs to be done in ways where there's no profit to the doer. Where the doer is going to benefit directly, you don't have to worry, it will be done. If you allow the profit system to operate, you will find that business will take place. There will be supermarkets, there will be grocery stores, there will be record shops, bookshops, restaurants, whatever you need, there will be. You don't have to worry, it will happen automatically. But there won't be free hospitals, there won't be libraries, there won't be roads, there won't be a lot of things that we need urgently. For that you need tzav. One has to be able to see in one's own mind when a thing is tzav, and to understand, right, this is going to cost me money. This is going to cost me sweat and blood. This is going to cost me life. But it's tzav that has to be done. And that's all there is to it. That's one of the keys to survival, particularly in a Torah society. To understand that certain things just have to be done. Do you think Mordechai liked the idea of being recorded in Tanakh for all posterity as having been demoted? You know what an embarrassment it is to fail at university. The worst part of it is to have your name up there with an F next to it, if that's what they put for fail. That's the worst part of the failing. If nobody knew you failed, it would be tolerable. It would be pretty bad, but you could tolerate it. But when everybody comes to see, how did you do, and they see this blinking F next to your name, that's what you could just fall into the ground for. You can't tolerate that. Can you imagine having your name put as failed in the Torah for all posterity? Mordechai failed a year. He loses one out. He used to be fourth, now he's fifth. And it's always going to be recorded there. It's always going to be there for everybody to see. Do you think he likes that idea? Tzav. He understood that to save the Jews, the Purim story, Shushan Habira, it had to be done no matter what the cost is. That's it. And he does it. And so one goes through with the various things that one does in a lifetime. The Chofetz Chaim knew. He said, look, you have to go to Warsaw. Tzav. This is a commandment. It has to be done. Profit for me now. It's going to cost me infinitely more than I'm going to make. I'm going to spend billions and billions, and I'm only going to get 40,000 miserable rubles, but it has to be done. And the Chofetz Chaim in fact said to his son-in-law, Tzvi Hish Levinson, he said to him once, you know, it says b'chol moedecha, you must love God with all your money. He says, that doesn't apply to you. You love Torah more than money, said the Chofetz Chaim to his son-in-law. And you've got to know that sometimes you've got to sacrifice Torah, the same as other people have to sacrifice money in order to do certain things which need to be done. If you're a Rosh Yeshiva, it requires you to do certain things at the expense of your Torah. The way we've explained this b'chol moedecha and the whole concept of money, you don't have to come on to this thing of the Chofetz Chaim. And the Chofetz Chaim said to his son-in-law, the concept that Chazal said that b'chol moedecha means money doesn't apply to you. The way we're coming out, it does apply to you too. Money is the most valued of all things for tzaddikim and for amaratim. And one has to know that sometimes one has to sacrifice sweat and blood represented in money, and sometimes not represented in money. It makes no difference. Sometimes one has to sacrifice the profits to do that which is right. So it has to be done, and you can't start calculating what it's going to cost, because that's irrelevant. One has to know hospitals have to be built, armies have to be kept going, roads must be serviced, libraries must be provided, telephones must be provided, certain things must be provided that maybe can't make a profit. It has to be done no matter what the cost. And if that means lowering our own standard of living, we've got to lower our own standard of living. That's just how it is. And so it is with all these spiritual things that one does. If one's living with the Beis HaMedrash, the Beis HaMedrash has to be kept going. One has to be at the davening, one has to participate in the learning, one has to contribute to the learning. So that's just the way the world operates. It has to be, because if people didn't, the thing would collapse, and if it collapsed, you wouldn't have it. And so it's tough. Figure out what it costs me. What does it cost me in money to contribute to the Beis HaMedrash? I've got to lower my standard of living, or to contribute to other yeshivas. Sad luck, so you have to lower your standard of living. Tzav, it has to be done. What does it cost me to make it to the davening? What does it cost me to contribute to a shiur, to work, to prepare, to revise, that I can ask an intelligent question, give an intelligent answer, make an intelligent diuk, an intelligent remark? What does it cost me in time and effort? Sad luck, that's tzav, that's how we live, that's how we operate. At times we have to know that these things have to be done. Likewise, there are times that one has to give to one's family. One has to give time to one's wife, one has to give time to one's children. One asks oneself, what is this time costing me? A businessman says to himself, what is it costing me? I could be making millions. And a Bentera says to himself, what is it costing me? I could be learning. True, but tzav, it has to be done. One has to have a very balanced and clear idea in one's mind of what is tzav and what isn't. When something is tzav, it has to be done. And with that, one has a clear attitude, one has a whole approach to the earning and the spending of money. Earning of money is tzav, needs to be done. You've got to do it. How one does it? Honestly. As a result of doing it honestly, it means working harder. As a result of working harder, and particularly of the Mesiris Nefesh in terms of the time and progress that has been sacrificed in earning that money, one values that money. If you value that money, you're careful how you spend it. And you spend it only on things which can bring you back spiritual reward. Mitzvahs, making other people comfortable, and spending money on wife and children is a mitzvah. It's a chesed, and in some cases it's a tzedakah. One has to do that. It's one of the things one takes pleasure in spending money on. Educating one's children, having the sforim one needs in order to operate, living in a way which enables one to do the things that one would like to do in order to progress. These are the calculations one has to make, but that's what one spends money on. Not on collecting things, only on spending on things which are going to bring the returns. That's how one relates to it. And that money is valuable. And when that money is valuable, everything you use on it on becomes valuable. The things you buy with it are more meaningful. The things you can do through that money are infinitely more valuable than they would be if that money was easily earned. And lastly and most importantly, when somebody receives something from you, time, money, hospitality, whatever it is, that gift is worth ever so much more. And in short, we find that because of the chavivus of that money, because of the love that a tzaddik has for his money, it gives that money a potency, a value and a power that can't possibly be achieved by an amoris, by an ordinary person. That's the attitude that we have to have, and that's what we have to understand. Says the Rebbeinu Shalom to Aaron, I'm worried, or to Moshe, I'm worried about Aaron Uvonov, about Aaron and the Kohanim. They are so keen to not waste time on anything other than their own progress, that surely when it comes to korbanos, they'll rather choose those korbanos that have perks, so that they don't have to worry about earning a living for that month. They get it through the perks, and what will happen to the Ola? Tell them, Moshe, tzav, it has to be done. I know they'll get nothing out of it. I know what it will cost them. They'll be putting in time and they'll be getting nothing financially out of it. But tzav, it has to be done. When a human being understands clearly what a tzav is prepared to go ahead with Mesiris Nefesh and to do with that which has to be done with the same love and same dedication that he would attend to his own business.